Good afternoon. My name is Alwyn Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the commission's regular meeting of June 12, 2024. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda, currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety for the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone. I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please state that you are present. Commissioner Barry, Commissioner Einhorn, Commissioner Farish?
Here.
Commissioner Fusashi, Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Here.
Commissioner Ganswin, Commissioner Hankins?
Here.
Commissioner Streeter?
Here.
And myself, Chairman Alwyn Egan. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of May 22nd. Do I hear a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Streeter, I move adoption of the minutes of the May 22nd, 2024 meeting.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll conduct a roll of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number FIC 2023-0324, Kenneth McCoy versus Carl Jacobson, Chief Police Department, City of New Haven. Are you there, Mr. McCoy?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter. The complainant does not wish to participate. This was withdrawn and dismissed. I don't think anybody's here from the City of New Haven, but I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Thank you. Is this a discussion? All right, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0346, Michael Ward versus Chief Police Department, City of Stamford et al. Are you there, Mr. Ward?
Yes, Commissioner. I am here.
Okay. Would you like to be heard?
Yes.
We'll mark that ready.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone here from the City of Stamford? Okay. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0347, Luis Diaz versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. Luis Diaz, are you there, please?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter again. The complainant chose not to participate. This was a failure to prosecute in a dismissal. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0350, Anthony Lazzari versus Chief Police Department, Town of Berlin et al. Are you there, Mr. Lazzari?
I am.
Would you like to be heard, sir?
Yes.
All right, we'll mark this ready. Is there anyone there for the Town of Berlin?
That's the next case.
I apologize.
That's no problem. All right, thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0351, Anthony Lazzari versus Chief Police Department, City of Meriden et al. Mr. Lazzari, would you like that marked ready as well?
Yes, please.
All right, we'll mark that one ready.
Mr. Chairman, could
yes.
I just interject here for a moment? I believe Mr. Lazzari was not incarcerated when he originally filed his complaints. When we became aware that he was incarcerated, we informed him of our procedures, that if inmates would like to participate via telephone, they should indicate and should supply us with an affidavit indicating whether there's anyone else who could represent them in person, a family, friend, lawyer, whatever the case may be. Mr. Lazzari is, I believe, and he can speak to this, refusing to submit that affidavit to us, but as you are aware, he is here on the telephone. I just wanted to point out that he did refuse to comply with that, at least that's my understanding. and
Is there a jurisdictional issue?
No jurisdictional issue. It is our process following the memorandum of understanding that we reached many years ago with DOC in terms of how we would proceed with incarcerated individuals. So, you know, at this juncture, I don't think there's any harm in allowing Mr. Lazzari to proceed, but I, in my view, I would want to let him know that if he does not do so in the future, that the commission might decline to hear from him in this way.
Understood, Mr. Lazzari.
I have no comment on that.
All right.
Is that true, Mr. Lazzari, that you do not wish to fill out the affidavit or that you are refusing to fill out the affidavit?
I refer and cite everything that I put in writing already in my response as to that.
Well, I don't have that before me at the moment, so I'm not sure
what you were referring to. You know, that's why I responded in writing, so that was crystal clear, you know.
Okay. You'll be met with courtesy today, but you may not be met with the same courtesy if you fail to follow our guidelines or our procedures in the future, all right? Moving on. Docket number FIC 2023-0596. Cordero Silva versus Wayne Williams, Chief Police Department, City of Ansonia. Are you there, Mr. Silva?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, the complainant does not wish to participate. This was a withdrawal and dismissal. I don't know if the City of Ansonia is here, but I will move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0320, John DeLorio versus Information Technology Services, State of Connecticut, Connecticut General Assembly, et al. Is John DeLorio there, please? Is anyone here from Information Technology Services? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, this was withdrawn and dismissed. I'll move adoption of the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0314, Len Bestoff versus Executive Director of Cromwell Fire District, et al. Len Bestoff, are you there, please?
Here.
Oh, would you like to be heard?
I have nothing to say, but if you can stand up there, I can.
If you have nothing to say, can we act on this matter?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize.
Council,
Kevin Mono is the hearing officer
Thank
in this
you.
Matter. I just have a brief amendment to this hearing officer's report.
You want to come forward?
Sure. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to interrupt. I need to recuse myself from this matter because I'm a friend of Mr. Bestoff and serve on a nonprofit board with him. Should
okay.
I leave the room now?
Yes, please. But don't go too far.
I won't go too far.
I think it's going to be relatively
sorry,
quick.
So the proposed amendment is just in the order, paragraph 1A. It's just to correct a scrivener's error. It would change the number 32 to 31 to comport with the factual finding in paragraph 24 of the findings and conclusions.
So where it says lines 32 through 34, it should be lines 31 through 34?
Yes, that's right.
And then what's the other amendment?
No, that's the only amendment. It's just that there was a discrepancy between the findings and the order. So that
amendment
just corrects that discrepancy.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, there's just a scrivener's error. I don't know if we need a full, but I will if you feel that it's necessary.
Do we need a motion?
I think that would be good because it does have some substantive effect.
Again, Commissioner Streeter, I will move that we amend the hearing officer's report in the order to change the scrivener's order as described by the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion to amend has been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the amendment. Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Goldsby Wells, I apologize.
Yes.
And Mr.
I don't think I...
No, no, I skipped over Commissioner Farish, I apologize. So we have Commissioner Goldsby Wells, yes, correct.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Goldsby Wells.
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins.
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan. Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Oh, she knows. All right. You're off. So the next two matters have been marked off. Would you like me to call them?
Yeah, you can just see who they are.
So first is docket number FIC 2023-0334, Elijah L. Hayaj Bey versus Department Head Procurement, City of Hartford, et al. And that matter has been marked off or over?
Yes, marked off by staff. Same with the next one.
And we'll take it up on another day. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0367, Elijah L. Hay versus Director, Department of Public Works, Town of East Hartford, et al. And that one has also been marked off. Okay. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0336, Peter Curran versus Chief Clerk, State of Connecticut Judicial Branch, New Britain, Superior Court, et al. Are you there, Mr. Curran?
Yes. Hi, James O'Connor for the respondents.
Okay. Would you like to be heard, or would you like to act on this? Because it doesn't appear that Mr. Curran is here.
Yeah, we would prefer that you would act on it. I do not need to be heard.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, this was a dismissal. Seeing no objection of the respondent and the complainant is not here, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on this matter? Motion's been made and seconded. No discussion. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. And then last is docket number FIC 2023-0360, Nicholas J. Polis versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Is Nicholas Polis there, please? Council, would you identify?
For the respondents, and we just urge adoption.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, this the complainant had failed to appear. It was dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. All right. Before we consider the cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements.
Sure. As the Chairman indicated, these proceedings are being recorded in their entirety. There's no need to request a recording. We will make them available on our website very soon after the meeting. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral arguments, 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Excellent. Thank you. So the first matter is docket number FIC 2023, that one has been already acted upon. First number matter is Mr. Ward's matter. It's docket number FIC 2023-0346, Michael Ward versus Chief Police Department, City of Stamford, et al. Are you there, Mr. Ward?
Yes, Commissioner, I am. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Is there anyone here from the City of Stamford at this time? All right, Mr. Ward, you have the floor.
Thank you. And to start off, Commissioner Egan, I apologize for misrepresenting your name in the roll call.
Okay.
So I received the report from the hearing officer, and I have mixed emotions because in the end, if I read it correctly, Green, pro se, I think I mean, this, the words won, I believe I won
because it was noted that if they were the Stanford Police Department were to give me the two items I was requesting. But the problem is, and I do recognize the jurisdiction of the Freedom of Information Commission and what your role is. I did receive something from the Stanford Police Department, Internal Affairs Sergeant, that did an investigation report of a citizen's complaint I filed. And I did receive the video, the body cam footage. For that matter, the body cam footage isn't an issue. And so the investigation report that I requested on one single citizen's complaint is not what was represented to me on December 1st, 2023 at the the contested hearing in person. That I think, if I can point, I have many, many points, but just to recognize my time and also to recognize the docket you all have in front of you, I'd like to just pretty much take it down to a couple of main points. On page 2, and am I doing this correctly? Just go over where I think there's a mistake.
Sure.
Okay, so on page 2, when we talk about factual background and procedural history, it says it's found that on or around June 6th, I'll say myself, Michael Ward, filed a submitted citizen's complaint. On June 8th, the report came out, and it was unfounded and exonerated. I received that. I called the Internal Affairs Department and directly spoke with Sergeant Connolly, Michael Connolly, who did the investigation report. We had a very lengthy conversation, and that the citizen's complaint was about a May 27th, 2023 police report that was entered and taken by Officer Molly Phelan, and I apologize, I don't have her badge number, and she submitted a report that I felt was 98.9% wrong. I was just flabbergasted when I got a copy of the report, because I went in to file a complaint of a crime, and it is a very odd scene that happened, but everything was recorded on the body cam footage, which is the second portion of this complaint, where I said, can I please have a second link, because I couldn't watch it. It's only good for 5 to 7 days for security reasons. And I it took a couple days for me to actually open the link, and then I watched some of it, and I couldn't watch it all. But you can see my complaint of citizen's complaint, there's a reason why I thought that I believe it was citizen's complaint 2023-017 of the Stanford Police Department was very much not what I said in the body cam footage to Officer Phelan. And also there's a sergeant that came out to help, a sergeant, Steve Murphy. And that is the investigation. The Stanford Police Internal Affairs Investigation Report I wanted, because when it came back, there's no citizen's complaint in the entire city of Stanford in the police department that's ever come back within less than 2 days of the submission of an actual complaint, and it's being unfounded and exonerated, which does mean other city attorney represented that it was not sustained, which isn't true, because there's five things it could be. Not sustained means nothing happened. Exonerated and unfounded does mean that things did happen and maybe just didn't fall in their description of things they would pursue at disciplinary. So In the report I received on December 5th at the hearing of Information Freedom was a 30-page document that I'm really scared about this because I feel I'm just digging a bigger rabbit hole with the police department by saying there's something wrong here. Why is it there's such a discrepancy? And now why do I get this report that is, it's basically three or four other citizen complaints about other matters wrapped in together and extremely lengthy. And unfortunately is the verbiage within the author of it makes me nervous because it seems it sounds like the attorney that contacted me for the city of Stanford representing the police department was like the same verbiage and the same descriptions and adjectives and adverbs. And I honestly, at the end of, we had to have it continued to a second contested hearing because, which I find a little unfair because the respondents didn't have a witness. They had witnesses, but they didn't have someone that could opine on the validity of that report. They brought someone that spoke about the body cam footage, which really wasn't a problem. They gave me the second leak of the body cam footage, like before the hearing, which I apologize for wasting the time of Freedom of Information Commission. That's bad. And then to give a report that starts off in a narrative of communication of me asking questions. How do you file a complaint? What's going on? And then for them to talk about how I filed a separate complaint about the sergeant that came in after, who basically just stopped me filing a complaint of a crime, just stopped me and was like, I don't believe you, just go, leave. It took him 45 minutes to basically get me out of the police station as I was all confused of why he won't even look at my evidence of something that was so sophomoric to describe. So in the end of that, so we had a continuation. So the Stanford Police Department, represented by the Stanford attorney, could bring in another witness. After that witness testified and cross-examined, my final words, I said, this is not what I asked for. I asked for the citizen's complaint, and it adds in at point 7, and the answer in 8 of Officer Molly Phelan, police report she did on May 23rd, 2023. And what I received was a compilation of a 6-month process of other citizen complaints I filed that were never looked at. And it makes me more scared because my civil rights were violated by code of a police department saying, we're not going to help you. Stop asking us for help. We don't care. Stop calling. And that's written, basically that's my words, that's written in Mr. Munn's report. So that's my main reason that I wanted to come forward and speak of, I did get something, that is correct. That is the Freedom of Information jurisdiction, thank you. But it's written that I received a complete and accurate copy of the requested report, and that's not true, that's number 20. In number 19, it stated that my testimony is that I did not get a complete and accurate copy of the report, and that's not true. And there's actually another Freedom of Information contested hearing appeal that was filed and accepted that asks for the other part of what happens with internal affairs when they do a full investigation. So I didn't say this is I didn't pick apart saying, you know, thank you, but this is wrong, because that means I'm asking the Freedom of Information Commission to make a determination that the police department did something wrong. That's not your jurisdiction. I was saying, this is not what I asked for. I want the citizen's complaint 2023-017. And that basically is somewhat the presentation. I feel what was represented in the report is really off. I think I have 22 points that I feel was very incorrect. And one of the main reasons I'm worried is because Officer Munn entered my evidence exhibit one, as his own email. As we started evidence, I said, well, I think I have about 20 pieces of evidence. He said, that's a lot. That's too much. I said, well, 10? And I had copies for everyone. In fact, I had copies for Despy. And I don't even want to get into the discussion about Despy because they're not part of the discussion anymore. So I think that's just a waste of time discussing that whole part.
Mr. Ward, you've gone beyond your. Mr. Ward, sorry. Mr. Ward.
I made copies.
Mr. Ward.
I would like to.
Mr. Ward.
So when he put them in, he took out. He didn't have 11 pieces of paper.
Sir.
My evidence. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sir, I'm sorry. I think Attorney Murphy is stated.
I wanted to let you know that you're at 13 minutes right now. So you've gone beyond 10 minutes.
I would like to. I apologize. In conclusion, I would like the commission to not accept this final decision and please request that I get the requested public records. If that's correct, because what I received is not what I asked for.
Thank you. Hearing officer. Available. 21.
Good afternoon. For the record, Kevin Munn, I was the hearing officer in this matter. Mr. Chairman, do you have a specific...
Can you address his major concern there? He's not getting a complete and accurate copy of the report. Please.
At the first hearing, after some preliminary back and forth, the respondents gave Mr. Ward a copy of what they represented was the investigative report that he had requested. At the first hearing, Mr. Ward looked at it and he said that, as he stated, that wasn't what he asked for. In trying to clarify what his position was, I asked him, are you saying that this is, that there should be more than this? There should be additional information? And he said yes. So the respondents did not have a witness who could testify as to the thoroughness of the investigation, the completeness of the report that was provided. So we continued the hearing so the respondents could come back with the appropriate witness. At the continued hearing, the witness who was the officer in charge of the IA division for Stamford, the Stamford Police Department, and also the officer, the same person who drafted the report in question, testified that the report that Mr. Ward was given was the investigative report related to the citizen's complaint. He mentioned that was the only record they had responsive to the request. That record was marked as an exhibit. In looking at the report, it, based on the testimony and the description of what the citizen's complaint was, comparing it to what's in the investigative report, the investigative report addresses the citizen's complaint as it was described by Mr. Ward. So it does appear to be the correct investigative report. So based on all of that evidence, my finding was that the respondents gave Mr. Ward the investigative report he asked for and that they don't maintain any other responsive records. So that was the basis of that finding.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions? Okay. I think the report was very thorough. Looks like you spent a lot of time on it, so I intend to vote in favor of it. So I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Ferrish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Henkin?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, all in agreement, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you very much, Mr. Ward.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you, Attorney Moore.
Thank you.
You too. So docket number FIC 2023-0350, Anthony Lazzari versus Chief Police Department, Town of Berlin, et al. Are you there, Mr. Lazzari?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Is there anyone here from the Town of Berlin? Mr. Lazzari, you have the floor.
I only got 5 minutes left before I got to end the call. So I'm going to kind of wrap this up into two court complaints. Me versus the Berlin Police Department and the Meriden Police Department. I'm combining them both together because I only have 5 minutes left. In the hearing officer's decision report says I failed to appear. I think that's an exaggeration, knowing the circumstances and what was actually put forth. The scheduled hearing was in person. There was a request for transportation that was denied improperly by the hearing officer, or FIC, whichever one you want to classify it as. If there was documentation that the hearing officer or the FIC needed to provide an affidavit, they could have sent it over to the FOIA liaison at DOC, which they forwarded other documents, other transmittal of proposed final decisions to, and other documents they sent over to the FOIA liaison at a prior time. So I don't see why, if they needed anything to assign, they could have. They were sending mail here. All in my responses, all in my pleadings, very crystal clear as to my position and my argument on that. Constitutional law and constitutional protections supersede the MOU Superior Court decision. So anything that's inconsistent with due process and equal protection or any other constitutional protections cannot stand in law. I've never heard, and there was nothing that was supplied to me, that an affidavit is required for a party's address or residence. I've never heard anything before. This is the first time it's coming to my attention. And in this particular matter, it was very simple because verification could have been done in this matter. Obviously, they contacted the DOC FOIA liaison, and they were also sending mail here. So, I don't have any authority to make an in-person hearing or a telephone hearing, but that was up to the FOIA and the hearing officer to do that. So that's pretty much that goes, but I don't see how I failed to appear. I mean, if there was any kind of clarification as to how the hearing officer or the FIC expected me to get up there, I would have liked to have known how that would have been possible. I did everything I could to arrange transportation, and DOC said it was up to the FOIA to make that request. That request was not made. All my requests were improperly denied. The complainant was not afforded a reasonable accommodation, which substantially and significantly interfered with the FOIA process and the complainant's constitutional rights and protections. The complainant was not afforded a fair process, fundamental fairness, and the complainant was not afforded the full and fair opportunity to be heard. I don't know much more to really get in depth because I don't have too much time left on this call on my end.
So we're trying to arrange so you have more time.
Yeah, it's not going to happen because they're going to send me back in a couple of minutes, they said.
1 second.
That's okay. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. I mean, it's pretty much the fact that, you know.
You can put the counselor on the phone. I'll give him an order to keep him on the phone.
It's pretty simple.
If you can put the,
afforded the opportunity,
come forward, please.
Accommodation to,
1 second, you know, sir. 1 second. We're trying to get you more time. Just identify yourself for the
Mr.
record.
Mr. Lazzari, it's Counselor Supervisor Secor from Central Office. Is your counselor there?
Yes, he is here.
Can you put him on the phone, please?
Hold on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you.
They want to know if they have more time. They said
tell him that he needs to get on the phone because the counselor supervisor would like to speak with them, or we're going to call it over to administration.
They want to talk to you.
The supervisor, his
tell
supervisor wants to talk to
him. The DOC supervisor wants to speak with him.
Oh, the DOC supervisor wants to talk to you?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
It's okay.
He's saying that the supervisor is not available to counselor here.
Supervisor
no,
is on the phone.
I'm the supervisor here for a DOC. I'm here for the hearing for a DOC matter. So.
Okay, so the supervisor for DOC is at the hearing right now?
Yes.
She wants you to get on the phone. Yeah, that's what they said.
Oh, boy.
Counselor Jeter speaking.
Hi, Counselor Jeter. It's Counselor Supervisor Secor. How are you?
Good, yourself?
I'm well. He has to stay on the phone until the meeting is done.
Well,
this
you
isn't,
know that
this is not a privilege.
At 3 o'clock, a recall is at
yes,
1 minute.
You're going to have to get a hold of your supervisor. I've been trying to get a hold of all of your supervisors over there, and nobody is answering. So
yeah, I just called them too, and they're not answering. So I do know the officer's going to pull him back in his cell in the next minute.
What I'm telling you right now is he is going to have to be an off count. He needs to finish this. This is not a legal call. This is a hearing for the FOI committee. It has nothing to do with the legal call. He is docketed for right now. He has another one coming up in a couple minutes. He needs to finish his argument.
Oh, wow. I don't know. I don't know. We're just relying. I don't know what's going to happen here. But
if you have to call
the officer to watch him, and then I'll go down and speak to the supervisor because our shift ends in 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
I don't even know where she is because I called her.
Okay. Then if you have to call the DEPS office, please do so.
That's what I'm about to do, sir. That's what I'm saying to you. I'm going to call the officer so someone could be here with him.
Okay.
Because technically speaking, he should be back in his cell for recall.
Yes, but he can
so
be
I'm
an, gonna he can
speak
be an
to
off
lieutenants count. And officers, see what the next step is. He can continue to speak till we figure this out.
Thank you.
Hold on.
There you go.
Okay. So, sir, I didn't mean to cut you off. Are you finished? I have a question if you are.
Well, no. Now that I have more time right now, I would like to just finish really quick. If I have anything else I have to say, the complainant should have been able to participate in some type of method in both of the matters, either way, whether or not I requested transportation, whether or not the FOIA wanted me to do it by telephone, the hearing officer could have scheduled the hearing for a telephone. It was up to me whether or not I wanted to participate, and I probably would have participated by telephone, but I wasn't given that option. So I took the other option of doing it, making a request for transportation because they wanted an affidavit to confirm an address, residence, whatever it may be, and that could be verified through the website or through the DOC. And I keep getting letters and notices saying that I didn't file an affidavit.
Okay.
So the only thing I could say is I responded in a pleading to whatever request the hearing officer wanted. That wasn't good enough. They wanted an affidavit. It didn't make any difference because I'm a party to the action. You file pleadings and you're signing it and you're forwarding it over. Same thing as you attesting to the facts that are cited above or the argument that you're citing above. That's pretty much
so
what
my
argument is as far as that goes.
I just wanted to ask you, sir, what records were you requesting in the first matter, ending in 0350?
I don't have all the documents in front of me to be precisely accurate.
Okay, so what records were you requesting in either matter?
I don't have any the full paperwork in front of me, so for me to, I wouldn't be able to be accurate as to what I was requesting. It's in the actual files that I submitted to the FOIA and to each police department as to what I was requesting.
Okay. So, and then I'll just let you know that if you don't get what you need now, you can make a a subsequent request, and that can be addressed at a later date. And then any of the forms that the FOI sends you, we're not treating you any differently than we've treated anyone else. So just understand that. And we've had many inmates who have testified or brought complaints here before. So it's a process that's been in place and it has worked in the past. And so you're not being treated any differently. You're not being singled out. You're being treated exactly the way everyone else is being treated. So I want you to understand that. And it's a fair system. Okay? Does anyone else have any questions for...
And the affidavit, Mr. Lazari, is just to indicate to us that you don't have anybody who can appear in person for you. It's not very detailed at all and would then enable you to have a telephonic hearing like you're attending this telephonic meeting right now. So it doesn't have to be a formal form that you fill out. You just need to attest that you don't have somebody who can come here to participate on your behalf. I'm looking at the hearing officer report and it says that we asked for the name and contact information for your attorney as you had represented that you were originally going to get counsel. So we postponed your hearing for you to enable you to do that. And then something fell apart where you indicated, or at least that's my interpretation, that you were not going to fill out an affidavit and that you did not seem as if you wanted to participate in this way. So that's why we're here at this juncture.
But, sir, if it fails and you just request again, now you know the process. All right? And you can have a hearing on the actual substance of your matter. Rather than
the
on this
problem that you'd run into with that is if all the stuff that I requested that should be preserved may not be preserved at a later time, and then it goes back to, oh, it's not available anymore, or it was destroyed or not preserved or saved. That's a big constitutional problem.
Yeah, unfortunately, you weren't able to tell me what the documents were, but that I can understand your concern about that.
Well, it's all listed in writing. I mean, if I were to be on here and read everything to you, it would take, you know, a lengthy amount of time. I don't think that we have a lengthy amount of time to go over each and every specific line. And plus, while I don't have it in front of me, I mean, that's obvious that I don't have my paperwork in front of me with the whole file, then how would I be able to then reiterate, go through each one, you know, one at a time? Difficult. And that should have been done at the hearing, not here. We shouldn't be litigating it now. This is just to say, I couldn't have possibly failed to appear when I can't freely go in person. The other stuff you could deal with, you know, secondary to the primary concern. That's the primary concern, is that it's creating a false narrative, making me look like I just didn't show up.
Okay. Do any of the commissioners have any questions for Lazari? All right. Was there additional time given to Mr. Lazari?
Yes.
Right now, so no one's telling me to leave, so whatever you guys got to do, you guys can keep proceeding.
Attorney Lepore.
Yes, this is Attorney Lepore with the department, Mr. Lazari. We are working on getting a hold of one of the deputy wardens right now, just to ensure that he can have additional time, as much time as he needs to complete his argument today.
Okay.
But there should be a CO coming to relieve the counselor shortly so we can get a hold of a supervisor.
Okay, so why don't we have a vote on this one and then we'll proceed to the next matter for Mr. Lazari. I'd entertain a motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Stringer, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. So, Mr. Lazzari, that matter passed unanimously. We're going to go to the next matter while you're still here. This is docket number FIC 2023-0351, Anthony Lazzari versus Chief Police Department, City of Meriden, et al.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to recuse myself from this matter.
Okay. Commissioner Hankins is recusing himself from this matter. We're waiting for him to leave the room. We'll get you.
Yeah.
Not the building. All right, so sorry, there's no one here from
I apologize.
There's someone here from the City of Meriden. So, Mr. Lazzari, would you like to begin? This is the Meriden matter.
Okay.
And then, Council, one second, sir. I'm sorry. I apologize, sir. One second. Could you identify yourself, Council?
Sure. Attorney Emily Holland from the Meriden Corporation Council's office on behalf of the respondents.
So Attorney Emily Holland is here from the City of Meriden, sir. So I'm going to let you go first and then Attorney Holland second.
Okay.
Please.
I kind of reiterate or adopt what I said in the prior argument of FIC 2023-30-0350. But I'm also going to reiterate it because there's someone that's in attendance, the respondent's attorney. So I just want to say that the complainant in this matter couldn't have possibly failed to appear if he can't freely go to the commission hearing. The commission hearing was scheduled in person. It should have been probably scheduled by telephone. If that's the procedures that is done for all the other inmates or people that are detained, then it should have been scheduled by a telephonic hearing. If the complainant then at that time did not want to participate by telephone, then it would have been on the complainant's, you know, it would have been their issue, not the FIC. In this case, it was scheduled by the hearing officer or the FIC for an in-person hearing, which then now interfered with the complainant's ability to participate. You know, so requests were actually made by the complainant to attend the contested hearing by transportation, and also those requests were denied improperly by the hearing officer or the FIC, however you know you want to classify the name. I should have been, the complainant should have been afforded the opportunity to be heard and to participate in some type of manner in this particular matter, and the complainant was not afforded that right. The complainant wasn't afforded a reasonable accommodation in this matter, which obviously substantially and significantly interfered with the FOIA process and the complainant's constitutional rights and protections. The complainant was not afforded a fair process and fundamental fairness. And the complaint was not afforded the full and fair opportunity to be heard. So it kind of goes back to the whole report in the very beginning. The primary concern is that the complainant failed to appear. And like I said prior, that the complainant does not have the ability to appear in person at this time. The FIC and the hearing officer was well aware of that. That could have been confirmed. They obviously, the hearing officer made contact with the FIC, whoever was in the office made contact with the FOIA DOC liaison, providing documents and sending some other stuff over to me via, I'm assuming, mail or email. I'm not too sure which one it was. But the MOU Superior Court decision, that was the first time that it was really brought up. I think it was in April. Of this year, and then in the hearing, the repeated hearing officer, and even though there's an understanding between both constitutional law and constitutional protections, always supersede any order decision that is contrary to one's rights and protections. And in this particular matter, once again, that was what happened. in this particular matter. And something could have been done to schedule a telephone hearing. And the affidavit, I've never heard of the affidavit being done for a party's address or residence or verification. I made it clear when I reached out to DOC about those particular requests inside the, I guess, responses and orders from the FIC and the hearing officer. Verification could be done in this matter. Transportation could have been done in this matter. Neither was done because I kept being forwarded or relayed back messages of a affidavit. If the hearing officer or FOIA needed to, I mean, the FIC needed to have me fill out an affidavit, they could have sent one over to the FOIA liaison and they could have provided that to him like they did other documents to come over and talk to me about. And that could have been something that could have been done. But I pretty much responded thoroughly and precisely to the hearing officers and the FIC's requests and the orders. I made it clear if there was anyone who was going to be filing anything as an appearance, it would have been done. The complainant sought and was seeking representation. And thereafter, the complainant notified the FIC and the hearing officer in both FIC matters that that was not going to be happening and that he was not going to have anyone available to participate in substitution of the complainant. At that time, they could have scheduled a telephonic hearing and proceeded that way. They chose to do an in-person hearing and put the blame on me and say, I didn't fill out the affidavit. Regardless of whether or not an affidavit was filled out or not, they knew the circumstances, they knew what the situation was. It should have been their responsibility to make sure that the complainant was afforded the full and fair opportunity to be heard and to have a method of participation. And in this case, it didn't happen. So I'm going to just conclude with that.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners,
I just have a few items to put on the record. First, I do object to allowing him to participate by telephone today since he did not submit the affidavit as was requested or ordered by the commission. The orders from the commission were very clear. He was to provide an affidavit prior to the hearing in order to be allowed to participate by telephone. He failed to do so. It was noted on the record on the day of the hearing and was checked at the beginning of the hearing to confirm that an affidavit had not been submitted by Mr. Lazzari. Mr. Lazzari was also provided the option to withdraw and refile his complaint, but he failed to do that. There was a clear requirement for the hearing, and we know that Mr. Lazzari received the orders from the commission asking him for an affidavit because he responded via email and referenced the request and asked for try to get around the request is how I would put it. I was present the date of the hearing along with a witness. The witness, attorney Christopher Clark from my office, detailed for the record the efforts that went into his the initial response to the request, as well as the amount of time spent by counsel in preparation for the hearing. The city of Meriden has put significant effort into Ms. Lazzari's continued failure to comply with the orders of this commission. I would state that the underlying matter stems from Mr. Lazzari's failure to clarify his initial request. A request was received by the city. We sought clarification from Mr. Lazzari and instead received the complaint filed with the FOIA commission. So in the future, I would urge Mr. Lazzari to speak with counsel and try to clarify your request before coming to the point of filing a complaint, and we can work with you on that. But I would therefore urge adoption of the hearing officer's report dismissing the complaint. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions? Thank you. With that, I'd entertain a Motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Caldwell.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins? Excuse me. Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Commissioner Hankins has recused himself from this matter. Great. Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Lazzari. I wish you luck in the future.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. So it looks like the next matter is Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Consideration and notice of the executive board's recommendation to deny the petition for relief from vexatious requester in the city of Shelton versus David Moore.
Before we get to that, Mr. Chairman, I was informed that Mr. Curran, who was in docket 2023-0336, was on his way here, and I presumed he would seek a reopening because he did adopt that matter and not appear. But I don't think he's here.
Is Peter Curran here? Well, if he comes, maybe we can reopen it before we end.
Okay, so then, yes, moving on to item number three. I'm going to ask you to uphold essentially my recommendation to deny this petition for relief from vexatious requester in City of Shelton versus David Moore. It's docketed as our PRVR number 13. And I want to thank our staff member, Molly Steps, for going through this petition for me and helping me make my decision, which I didn't think it rose to the level as we've discussed in other cases in our prior decisions that we've ruled that a citizen was vexatious. I didn't feel that this came anywhere near that standard. In this case, the respondent filed 14 requests over a period of 19 months, which did not seem to be over the top. The petitioners really didn't provide any evidence of any content, language, or subject matter that was abusive, aggressive, harassing, or appeared to be in bad faith. There didn't appear to be any indication that he was using his requests for a purpose other than to obtain records. It appeared that his requests were very directed toward an issue that he had and were pretty straightforward. And also the petitioners didn't provide us with any documentation establishing any pattern of conduct that abused the right to access information or interfered with the operation of the agency, which is part of the language of the statute in 1206B6. So since really none of the elements appear to be there in this particular petition, I did not think it warranted a hearing. And that's why it's before you today to decide if you agree or want to switch that up. But I'd ask you to uphold that decision.
Is there discussion?
This is Commissioner Hankins. I would, after listening to Attorney Murphy, I would agree to with her decision to uphold the her decision to deny the petition. And you know, given what Attorney Murphy has said, I think the petitioners, or any petitioner, really would do well to study PRVRs numbers 1 and 4 to just see what type of vexatious and egregious conduct is to satisfy the commission. So on that basis, I would make a motion to deny the petition for relief from vexatious requester in PRVR number 13.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call from those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we have the item number 4.
That's when we have a superior court decision and actually two decisions, and commission was upheld in those matters. I'm thinking maybe Attorney Munn might like to speak to them. He's involved the city of Bridgeport on some familiar topics to you.
Good afternoon. For the record, Kevin Munn. I was commission counsel in these appeals. It is two consolidated appeals, but they are substantively identical, and the two decisions from the court are identical. So I'll speak about them as if they're one case, but they are two. So these cases involve requests from the New England Innocence Project to the Bridgeport Police Department for records relating to a 30-year-old murder investigation. It's a pretty familiar fact pattern that we've seen in some of the other appeals that we've had. So no records were provided until a couple days before the hearing. At the time, I think it was 3 days before the first hearing, Bridgeport provided some records, withheld other records, and redacted some information. And got to the hearing and made the claim, which again we've heard before, that because the complaint did not specify which exemptions were being challenged because the records were not provided until 3 days before the hearing, that the commission didn't have authority to address the claims of exemption. And then, so that was a procedural claim, and then there were two. By the time we got to the appeal, there were two exemptions that were at issue. One was 1-210B3A, which is witnesses who are not publicly identified and who would be subject to threat or intimidation if their identities were made known. And 1-210B1, which is preliminary drafts and notes. On the procedural claim, last fall, you may remember Attorney McGee had a successful appeal in the appellate court. The appellate court rejected the procedural defenses that Bridgeport had been raising, and concluded that when a complainant claims that the agency violated the act by failing to provide all requested records, that necessarily encompasses a claim that the agency violated by withholding or redacting some records. And so when that's the claim, even if the specific exemptions aren't identified in the complaint, the commission does have authority to address the claims of exemption. In this case, Bridgeport made the same claim. The trial court's decision largely just quoted the appellate court decision, and then made in one or two sentences aside from that, but it was not a major part of the decision here. The bulk of the analysis really focused on the two exemptions. So the first one, which again is the 1-210B3A for identities of unknown witnesses. So this is another case where the Bridgeport Police Department redacted the names of all witnesses unless the requester provided information to show that the witness was known. So essentially flipping the burden of proof and putting it on the complainant to show that the specific witness is known, as opposed to the agency proving that the witness is not otherwise known and that the witness would be at risk. In this case, there was no evidence during the proceedings before the commission whether any of the witnesses whose names were redacted, whether they testified at trial, whether they were identified publicly some other way since trial. There was no evidence put on that there was any factual basis to believe that there was a specific risk to any of these witnesses. And in fact, in this case, the police department testified that they didn't know whether the witnesses who they claimed were at risk were even still alive at this point. And so the court upheld our decision that Bridgeport failed to prove that the exemption applied. And the court said essentially that the fact that Bridgeport presumed that all witnesses are at risk, and unless it's shown otherwise, is not sufficient to maintain their burden. They have that burden to put on specific evidence to show that a specific witness both has not been publicly identified and that that specific witness is at risk. The other thing that I think, the one thing that I think was perhaps the most helpful part of this decision for us going forward is that the court really focused on the fact that this case was 30 years old and that, you know, the facts are sort of set in stone at the time of the original prosecution, and that's the facts that we deal with when it comes 30 years later before the commission. It could be, you know, you have to show that at the present time, the witness both has not been identified yet and is at risk. So, you know, the court, as the court suggested, you know, in a case where that's 30 years old, a witness that may have been, tentative to testify 30 years ago, or it may have been some sense of risk of intimidation 30 years ago, doesn't mean that that's still the case in the present day. So I think that was helpful for when we have these cases, to police departments really have to put on evidence to show that currently the witnesses that they're, whose identities they're withholding, that there's a present risk to them if their identities were disclosed, not that, you know, decades ago they were concerned about that. On the other exemption, which again was 1-210V1 for preliminary drafts, in this case, the evidence that was presented really was just that there were handwritten notes in the records, but there was no evidence as to how the notes were used, what they were for, whether any of those notes were incorporated into a final police report or not, whether they were used some other way in the investigation. And the court, again, said that to prove this exemption, you have to focus on the specific notes that you're claiming are preliminary drafts or notes. You can't just say, well, they're handwritten notes, and so they must be preliminary drafts, or they must be notes. To fit the statutory definition, you have to show that it's a part of the agency's pre-decisional process. You have to show for each specific document that you're withholding that it meets the definition of a preliminary draft. And without that evidence, the agency can't meet its burden to prove the exemption. So I think overall it's a good decision. Because of the procedural claims we've had addressed before, but I think there's some helpful analysis on the two exemptions that apply that will be helpful going forward.
Good job.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Pending appeals. Did you want to report on the CHRO matter? I could. So, are we waiting on anything else? Oh,
The CHRO had filed an interlocutory type appeal with regard to a case caption designation, saying originally we had designated the attorney for Bridgeport. So it's interesting, we got Bridgeport on the other side here as the complainant. So we designated the attorney for Bridgeport, and then there was a clerical action and the case caption was changed to name Bridgeport as the complainant. And of course, you know, it's questionable whether a public agency can be a complainant. So there was oral argument about, you know, whether or not the designation of the attorney should be returned as the complainant, since he made the request and everybody understood he was making the request. So the case caption was like reinstated to name the attorney as the complainant, and the CHRO took an appeal from that before the proceedings, before the hearing officer have even concluded with a recommended decision to this commission. And so they also filed a motion to stay the proceedings before the commission. And we objected to the stay, and our objection was sustained. So we'll have an appeal going on about a case caption. At the same time, we'll have a contested case hearing proceeding below. So it's interesting.
This is Commissioner Hankins. Without disclosing or releasing secret information, what's the point of having the CHRO appeal a caption?
I don't think there is a point to it.
Okay, thanks. No, thanks. Okay.
Right. I don't know. I don't know that the court thinks there is a point either, because usually those motions to stay are granted.
Okay.
But he said that the proceedings before the commission can go forward, and I do believe that the hearing officer in the case that's still pending here has an in-camera order that needs to be complied with on Monday.
So there is less than meets the eye, as it were.
Yeah, a lot less, I think.
Who's the attorney for the CHRO?
Michael Roberts.
Is he an assistant attorney general?
No, I think he's counsel for CHRO. I think he's inside counsel for CHRO. And I don't really have anything else to report on, except that I believe, based on my phone call just now to Mr. Curran, he said he would be here in 5 minutes. So I don't know what the commission wants to do about that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Commissioner Farish, I had a quick question. When you talk about caption, do you just mean the name of the case?
Yeah, the designation. So the commission's regulations are pretty clear that the commission designates the parties to the case, so, you know, A versus B.
Yeah.
And then there was a change to that designation. And when that change came, it changed Attorney Testa, who was representing the city, who made the request. We changed the case caption to the City of Bridgeport. Okay. And then after the change, there was a petition to dismiss, because the argument was that Bridgeport as a public agency is not within the definition of the complainant, who can be a complainant. So then there was oral argument about that, and then we just reinstated, the hearing officer reinstated the, yeah, we're talking about the way we docketed.
Just the name of the case.
Commissioner Hankins, isn't a municipal corporation something, a legal entity that can sue and be sued?
Well, so
can't they bring it if they wanted to?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to opine on the substantive part of it.
I used to be a municipal attorney.
I'm going to leave that for the hearing officer, but more to come.
Right. We have one decision where we said essentially that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the question was raised, but it was not only raised, it was stated in the definitive that as if it was a well-settled question, and calling for me to not schedule the matter for hearing based upon that. Again, we're talking about our attempts when we get complaints. We have to try to figure out to the best we can who the parties are, and that sometimes changes because we don't have all the information. You know, there's lots of reasons why the names of the parties might change, but just to your point, that we do have one case saying that. But arguments could have been made along those lines.
Except it rolls by any other name, right?
Yeah.
It's Michael Rose, right?
Anyway. But it was an interesting one, and we did win a decision at the appellate court, but you're going to have to wait till next time to hear about that. But
so I can go make another phone call if you'd like.
Sure. If he has arrived, if that's not Mr. Curran back there by any chance.
Mr. Curran, would you like to come forward, please? We already ruled on your matter, but we're going to reopen it, I believe, so that you can argue.
The Respondent's Counsel fortunately has stayed with us.
Thank you.
Because we did alert him that...
I appreciate that. Thank you, Counsel. So, I'd entertain a motion to open the matter, docket number FIC 2023-0336, Peter Curran versus Chief Clerk, State of Connecticut Judicial Branch, New Britain Superior Court, et al.
Commissioner Hankins, I'll second. Just as a matter of form, so in other words, we're going to vacate the order then?
Move to reconsider.
Okay.
It requires a supermajority of the votes to do that. So you're going to move to reconsider. Is that correct?
So I will move to that we reconsider the decision we made earlier on docket FIC 2023-0336.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none. I'll take a roll call of those in favor of reopening. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes. Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And Alwyn Egan, myself, Alwyn Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. So the matter's been reopened. So now what we'll do is have the parties identify themselves, starting with you, sir.
Mr. Peter Kern, executive.
Okay, thank you. You're the complainant in this matter, right?
I'm coming in as the executive regarding the estates.
You're the complainant.
Okay.
And then, but in the executive capacity, I gave them the executive letter under law, Title 26. It hasn't been rebutted, so that's how I came in.
Okay. And sir, you are?
James O'Connor for the respondent.
Okay. So, Mr. Kern, would you like to begin?
There's nothing really to say. Like I said, I'm in agreement with the respondent as far as the statement he made in his post-brief regarding General Statutes 4-20 about who has the physical custody of those bonds that were requested. And the only other thing would be, being that the case was cited, Clerk of Superior Court versus Commission of Freedom of Information. I understand it's not within the commission's jurisdictions regarding those documents, but what is in the commission's jurisdiction is entries made and statements made under Title 18 of the United States Code, Sections 1001. And I want to hold that to the maximum of I want that applied in this case regarding the statements and the entries made by a respondent. As far as who has the physical custody of those bonds under 4-20 of the general statutes.
Thank you. Attorney O'Connor.
Yes, we would just urge adoption of the hearing officer's report. It's an accurate recitation of the facts that came out of the two sessions of the hearing and of the law. Just a couple of quick points to emphasize. First, the evidence demonstrated and the hearing officer noted in her report. Judicial provided a timely response to the complainant and an acknowledgement and a response, including the one responsive document that was in Judicial's possession. Both those letters, the acknowledgement and the response, were returned unopened, and this appeal arose from there. Mr. Curran sort of touched on it a minute ago. There were sort of three classes of documents here. There were documents that were related to his case that were filed in the clerk's office or not filed in the clerk's office. I don't know the status of all of those. I just know that they were outside of the scope of the act, and the clerk's office did not have those documents. They may have had a couple of them, but certain documents they didn't have. There were facts filed. It wasn't clear if a fax filing procedure had been filed. Followed correctly, or did they have a fax to the right address. The clerk's office only has what they have, and it was outside the scope of the act. Second was the oath of office of a Superior Court judge, which was provided timely via mail, and then I provided again a physical copy to him at the first session of the hearing. And the final was a group of documents of varying description that Judicial does not have. We had our administrative services division look into this. They could not find anything. He mentioned the bonds. I don't believe that they exist at all. They're not required to exist under 420 A and B. However, to the extent that they did exist, the statute says that they would be in the possession of the Secretary of State. I did reach out to the Risk Management Board just to see, is there anything we're missing here? They said there was not. They don't have these bonds. There aren't bonds issued for judges of the Superior Court. So we feel like we did our due diligence on this and provided them. We'll be doing this as quickly as we could. The hearing officer's report was accurate, and we urge its adoption.
Thank you.
Yeah, I did put in evidence that they were mandated by the legislation. I put it in the trial evidence or whatever, the hearing evidence. So it is mandatory and required in all 50 states. I submitted the evidence and it hasn't been rebutted. It's mandatory that you have to have bonding or some type of insurance or some type of coverage, whether blanket or whatever, in order to hold office. That's the law. It hasn't been rebutted. It's not by discretion. It's mandatory. I submitted that evidence. It hasn't been rebutted. There's no comment on the evidence. It hasn't been addressed. You know, it's still, the issue is still live. It hasn't been adjudicated. So, and as far as the jurisdiction not having, the commission not having jurisdiction over those documents that were missing from the docket, well, the commission does have jurisdiction under Title 18 regarding false entries, generally. That falls to administrative matters, which this is. So if there is some type of untruthfulness in the statements as far as the bonding information or other documentation that was suppressed without court order, that would be subject to Title 18. And I want to take full advantage of my rights as far as that, Title 18, Sections 1001. So that's what I'm at.
Attorney O'Connor, Mr. Curran made a request to the Secretary of State's office, that might be a place where he can get additional records that he's seeking.
To the extent that they exist, it would appear that that would be the appropriate evidence.
Okay. That might be another request that you might want to make, Mr. Curran.
Yeah, I did that already. Okay. I have a FOIA in for that, and based on his supporting statements also, that it is on the 4-20 and.
He's saying to the extent they exist. So you don't know whether they exist, but if they exist, that's where they would be.
It appears that way, just from my reading of the statute, which is, it simply says that they're to be filed with, to the extent that bonds are, for whatever officials they are required for, it says that they're to be filed with the Secretary of State.
And the same thing with the OLR part reports that I put in and everything. They said it's mandatory, the state has it.
Okay. All right. Do I need the commission? Yes, Commissioner Parrish.
I just had a question about a typo. Is your name Peter Curran or Currens with an S?
Curran, without an S.
Okay, some of the records mentioned it and yeah, S at the end, so I just wanted to check on that. But the other question I had, Mr. Chairman, is what's the procedure if we've already had the one vote and now we've reopened the arguments?
Attorney Murphy.
Yes. It's back on the table. You can vote to adopt, to amend.
Okay.
It's the same way you just would take in the first round.
A second vote. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Could entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I'll move it up to the House.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Parrish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yeah.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Curran. Thank you, Attorney O'Connor. So we're back on six.
I don't think I have any other reports under these items right now. So once we have other business, that's
that. Tyler?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move it up that we adjourn.
Motion made and seconded to adjourn. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Hankin?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. What was the high low?
I think Matt got it.
What time is it?